to The Dinosource, the Bare Bones Dinosaur Edutainment Podcast. I'm your host, Michaela Marshall.
And I'm your host, David Lindley. Today we're answering a question from my nephew. Did Triceratops sink or float in water? This sent me around the bend. This didn't ruin me, but...
I'm pretty excited to find out if we have an actual answer. That sigh does not bode well.
Right, like we don't. Like,
yep.
We'll get through a bunch of stuff, and then I'll say, and in summary...
You're going to make your best guess.
It'll be mealy-mouthed. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It'll be my best guess.
Because you say, this is the evidence that I have, and here is therefore my guess.
But we are so close. We are so close. Okay. How do you even approach such a problem? Did Triceratops sink or float? Because you can't just take the existing bones, chuck them in a lake, right? That's not quite an accurate test of this hypothesis.
No, you just build a to-scale Triceratops.
Out of flesh.
Sure.
Right? Like it,
or a flesh substitute. Ugh, gross.
Like ballistics gel, I guess?
I don't... Maybe? There's got to be something.
So, model making is an idea that we will come to, because instead of doing this in real life, it's actually slightly easier than constructing a terrifying flesh Triceratops to program a computer to simulate a terrifying flesh Triceratops in water.
Right, the one that I'm trying to build would A, be very large, mm-hmm. because it would be a Triceratops, and it would take a lot of whatever this flesh substitute material I have made up, question mark? Let us know, listeners.
Right, so it's got some problems.
Sure.
But if you can drop a virtual toy in a virtual bath, right, then you can see, okay, does this sink or float?
Yeah.
That sort of means that you have to have some good ideas about things like density.
Yeah.
And, like, the shape ends up mattering a fair bit as well.
It does.
It's been done.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that. The second approach is to look at modern analogs and be like, hey, this animal's kind of like a Triceratops. Does it sink or does it float? There are some problems with this as well.
I'm curious to see what animal we're going to come up with that is kind of like a Triceratops.
I think you'll be impressed.
Ooh.
Let's start with the model making, because this is the one that actually has the most scientific papers written about it.
Yeah.
Which is very exciting to me. There's a man named Don Henderson who has written quite a few excellent papers on the model making and floating methods.
Mm.
The first one was just on making the models and getting the densities right, but since then he's written others about the floating postures of various Mesozoic life. In fact, he's written papers about sauropods, theropods, and pterosaurs.
Mm.
So that's all of the major dinosaur clades, and pterosaurs, which aren't technically dinosaurs, except he's missed ornithischians.
He has, yeah.
And a triceratops is an ornithischian.
That's too bad for us.
I think this is suspicious, almost like he's hiding something.
Oh, good. This is a good conspiracy theory.
Why would he do pterosaurs before ornithischians?
Maybe he thought it'd be easier.
He has a triceratops model. I've seen it in the first paper on model making. He's even got, like, the various weights and things of the frill and horns and stuff. It's all there. He just has to run this through a computer and tell me the results, but he won't because he's hiding it.
I just want to make some sort of, like, you didn't say the magic word.
Yeah, basically. I am being kept from the truth right now, and it's kind of upsetting. It was so, so interesting, actually, going into this and being like, oh, right, I've heard about Don Henderson, his models that he's programmed and floated them. I've heard a lot about this, and I was like, oh, he's got one on sauropods. It's called Tipsy Punters, which is, like, the best name for a paper I can imagine.
Wow.
It's really evocative. It basically argues that sauropods were would float very well.
Uh-huh.
Because of their extremely light builds.
Right. They're mostly air.
So they would be tipsy in the water.
Oh, no.
And they
just
would be
bobbing around. Oh, it's terrifying.
Yeah, they'd be bobbing around. They'd, like, they wouldn't be stable,
no.
So they would tip over quite easily. And
because how they stabilize themselves. All their legs are beneath them.
Exactly.
Oh, they should not go in the water.
Well, we have some front leg-only tracks from sauropods, which are pretty mysterious, and they've generally been answered as, like, oh, this is sauropod trackways from going along underwater, with the back legs floating along and the front ones pushing you along, right? And this is where the punting comes in to tipsy punters, where you're punting your way along the bottom of whatever waterway you're in. And you're really tippy while doing it.
Oh, but you could be so deep because your neck is so long.
But there's problems with like going deep and then pressure around the neck.
Oh, anyway, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a straw collapsing. It's pretty bad. We're not here to talk about sauropods in the water necessarily. There's also some stuff about theropods, which were generally quite good floaters, which is reinforced by some research about Spinosaurus that happened fairly recently. This was the Hone and Holtz paper that argued that Spino was probably not an aquatic predator, because that would mean that it was like really working a lot at keeping itself submerged when it typically would be floating on the surface of the water, which is why they went for a semi-aquatic answer to like, how did this thing live? Which makes sense. The model-making papers are also pretty interesting in the assumptions they make about density, because they generally approximate animal body mass as having a density of about 1 kilogram per liter, which is the exact same as water.
It is.
So that generally implies that an animal is neutrally buoyant, and they can get a bit less dense or a bit more dense. The limbs are often reconstructed as being a bit more dense because there's more bone in them.
Right.
For things like theropods and sauropods, though, where the air sacs of the lungs invade the vertebrae and a bunch of other bones in the body, you start actually to lower the density there, which is why you get these sauropods floating so much.
It just seems weird, though, to make it the same as water.
But humans generally are mostly water.
It's true.
And again, this is a bit of an approximation, to be sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think it's reasonable to assume that, other things that are living are also mostly water. So the idea that dinosaurs were mostly water seems reasonable.
Yeah. I didn't appreciate until one of these papers how heavy Triceratops's frill and horns were. It gives an estimate for each horn to be 13 kilograms.
Oh my god.
And the frills plus the horns to be 83 kilograms total. Now, this is on like a three or four ton animal.
But still.
It's still a lot.
It's still a lot.
Yeah.
And like, that's all just solid.
Yeah.
Like.
Which we'll talk about when we're sort of wrapping this up, because that's a lot of weight really concentrated.
It is.
So.
On the head area.
On the head area.
The thing you need to keep out of the water.
To breathe.
To breathe.
Right.
Hmm.
I will say that the sauropod and theropod stuff, as well as the pterosaur, actually isn't very easily applicable to ornithischians, because sauropods and theropods and pterosaurs have these pneumatized skeletons. They've got their air sacs that invade the bones and hollow them out as bird bones, right? But ornithischians just have solid bones, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
So it's really not a good analog. You can't say, oh, sauropods floated, like Brontosaurus floated, so Triceratops would float. You have to say, oh, this is a very different lineage with very different bone density.
Yeah.
So who knows what's happening?
So what you're saying is there's no conspiracy theory.
No, there absolutely is a conspiracy theory, because that is not too difficult to program in and just run the numbers and let me have an answer.
But okay, but what if... It is too difficult because you don't know if you can reasonably say that the density is going to be one.
I mean, just increase the density. I don't care.
By how much?
I don't know.
This is the problem.
I'm not a scientist, Michaela.
All right.
Shall we talk about modern analogs?
Yeah.
I've ranked these basically from worst to best.
Okay.
So we start off with ducks. Michaela, do ducks float?
Yeah.
Is it a good analog for a triceratops?
No!
Why not? It's a dinosaur. Don't give me that sass.
I mean, you sort of just made the argument that it's not by saying that birds have light bones and Triceratops did not.
Okay, yeah, technically it's a theropod and Triceratops is an ornithischian and their bones are very differently pneumatized, sure. Technically, a duck is a waterfowl and its feathers are coated in waterproof coverings that allow it to float even better than if it didn't have that. And technically, a duck weighs in under 2 kilograms, which is a bit shy of the 4-ton range of Triceratops. But other than that, why are they a bad analog?
Not gonna answer that.
Yeah, you shouldn't. It's anyway, so I mean, ducks float though.
Yeah,
so good job them. Next one, crocodiles.
Okay,
right, we're getting better.
I mean, this is the thing, when you start at duck.
Yes.
That's a pretty low bar.
Right.
To clear.
They're dinosaurs.
Sure, sure. But now you say crocodile, I'm like, okay.
Yeah. So crocodile, not dinosaur, famously.
Right, famously.
But in the same archosaur family.
Uh-huh.
So, like, not too bad. We're not doing too bad. They're not 3 to 4 tons, but they are heavier than ducks.
Certainly.
They reach up to about 1 ton.
There you go. We're getting there.
We are so getting there. And they definitely float. Yes, a 1 ton crocodile is very scary.
That was the face I was making.
I know, because they're so scary.
A ton. They're so scary. Okay, moving on.
There's a reason that so many monster movies have been made about them.
Because they're really scary, turns out.
Dinosuchus was larger. Anyway, yes. They float.
Yep.
Good job to crocodiles. You know, you got the standard crocodile floating along just under the surface with its...
little eyes poking
little
out.
Little eyes and its little nostrils its little poking nose. Out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a bit worried that a difference of 2 to 3 tons is still too much.
It's a lot of difference.
It is a lot of difference. And, but in the crocodile's defense, they don't seem to have hollow bones either.
I was going to ask about their bones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tried to Google it. Couldn't find a lot. There are a lot of people who want to sell you crocodile bones.
Oh, weird.
Or, like, show you pictures of entire crocodile bones. But when you're asking, do they have air sacs, no one's really interested in answering that question. Again, the conspiracy runs deep here.
I really have a lot of questions now about what someone would buy a crocodile bone for.
It's a great question.
Maybe there's, like, some sort of weird kind of, like...
some strange rituals that, like, would involve...
that would involve crocodile bones, yeah. And have their roots... in, like, mysticism from right. the past.
Sure. Maybe.
Maybe. And, I mean, if you are from an area that has crocodiles, people are going to, yeah, have legends and things about crocodiles, because they're really scary.
They are. They can grow up to 1 ton.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's a lot. Okay. So if we need to go bigger than that, these days we need to go to mammals.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Which automatically makes things a bit worse, because mammals are not dinosaurs.
Yeah.
So then, hippos.
Okay.
Hippos are adorable in pictures and terrifying in person.
Yep.
Animal Planet tells me that more humans die each year from hippo attacks than from shark and lion attacks combined.
That's not surprising to me. I think people underestimate hippos.
Which they shouldn't. It's often the last thing they do.
Should not. Yeah, I've seen a hippo eat a watermelon.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's very scary.
Yep.
And, yeah, I mean, hippos aren't gonna come for you, you know, I don't think, if you stay back from them. I don't know, though. I wouldn't go near one, that's for sure.
Have you seen anything about hippos swimming?
I feel like they live in water, or they like
do.
Water.
Yes, they are heavily semi-aquatic, at least, to aquatic animals.
I'm imagining them very much being submerged, but being able to... Oh yeah, I'm imagining them swimming with their little feet. I don't know.
I'm going to show you a video which is going to be in the show notes for everyone else to watch. It's by Animal Planet. It's very good. And we'll take a look at what a hippo swimming looks like.
Yeah, okay. So it's like they're dolphins.
They're like a terrifying murder torpedo.
They are. It's swimming really fast.
Yes.
Sure. If there's like a lake and someone says, Mikhail, there's a hippo in this lake, I'm not going to go in that lake.
You should not go in that lake.
I would not.
No.
I think even being in a boat on that lake is a questionable choice.
Bad idea. Yeah.
Because, yeah, that hippo seemed like it exited the water pretty rapidly.
Right.
Yeah.
So a couple fun things about hippos. They weigh a bit over 1 ton. I've got like 1,200 kilograms here.
Sure.
They can swim on the surface of the water or possibly float. Darren Nash has at least one picture of that, and I believe it's been lost to time because he's not very good at doing internet archiving, but that's not here. Generally, hippos sink.
Mm.
According to Animal Planet, that is typically how they swim around. It's not by doing like a cute little doggy paddle like you were miming. It's by sinking to the bottom
and
pushing themselves, like running in a terrifying torpedo-like manner
and then just
along
jumping
the bottom.
When they need air.
Exactly.
That seems like a problematic way to travel.
How so?
Well, what if the lake gets really deep? I guess you just don't go in that part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. All
right. Like they can swim, right? They can go to the surface. They can float around a little bit. They can do a bit of a doggy paddle, but they're not very strong swimmers.
No.
What they are is very good runners in the water, which very scary. But this is the first thing that we've talked about that actually does generally sink.
Yeah.
And this is a good caveat to have. It would be generally sinks versus always sinks, because it's very good for animals to be able to swim when they need to. Otherwise, water is a death sentence. And there's a lot of water and you need to drink from it.
Yeah. And that made me think, like, can I think of an animal that I don't think would be able to swim at at all. And I don't think I can.
No.
Because, yeah, like, that would be very bad.
So that's not the question we're trying to answer, right? And we're trying to look at, is it buoyant? Would it float by itself? Or does it have to expend energy to keep afloat?
Yeah.
Because...
the hippo's expending energy.
And this is actually an interesting one, because humans kind of go on two sides of this, right?
I was just thinking...
like, I sink pretty aggressively in the water. I've never been able to float.
Oh, interesting.
I'm a good swimmer, but I cannot float.
I can, yeah, I can, like, float on the surface. I have to maybe move my arms and legs, like, a little bit.
Okay, yeah, no, if I'm moving around a little bit, I can do it.
I can be still for a bit and not just, like, instantly float.
Oh, no, my legs go down and then they drag the rest of me with it.
This really makes me question people who haven't learned to swim. What are they doing?
They're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
They stay in the cities generally.
They don't go to the water.
They should not, no.
No.
I think we can get a better comparison than hippos, though.
Okay.
I think the best comparison I have, and granted it's still problematic, is a rhinoceros.
Mm.
Rhinos are in the 2 to 3 ton range, which is very close to our Triceratops 3 to 4 ton range.
Got that face weight.
It's got the face weight. Yeah. It's got the big horn on the front.
Now, by proportion, I don't think that the horn is as heavy.
No, it's not.
As two horns and a gigantic neck frill.
It's not.
But it's still on the face.
It is on the face. Yeah. Yeah. Rhinos are an interesting one because I was like, oh, rhinos are a good analog. Can rhinos swim? So I spent a little bit of time just like poking around on the internet and found various videos that are titled things like rhinos love to swim or look at this rhino swim.
Sure.
They are wading at best. These people are being overly generous with their description of these rhinoceros.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's the same kind of thing where like they really don't want to swim.
They do not want to. They want to get in the water to cool off occasionally because that feels nice.
Yeah.
And this is sort of where I'm landing with Triceratops for now. It's like, it's not a bad analog, and in the absence of a proper scientific paper about this, I'm like, I'm most likely to go with rhinoceros. They're a bit more compact. They're like 2/3 the size, but 3/4 the weight of a Triceratops.
Right.
So but a lot of Triceratops' length is the tail, so it's hard to tell volume for volume what's different about them.
Yeah.
And this is where Don Henderson does have these answers. He has the volume and he has the approximate weight. He knows. He knows things and he's not telling
you. He doesn't want you to know.
Apparently not. Anyway, not to disparage Don Henderson and the good work that he's done. I don't think Triceratops were doing a lot of swimming voluntarily.
No.
I think that they could swim when they needed to, but generally they would be going around in subtropical climates, which is like the southern United States or like Spain, right, in terms of climate. And they're generally doing pretty okay. And then it gets hot some days. And what they do is they go into whatever body of water is nearby and cool off a little bit while they're having a drink.
Yeah. And like if push comes to shove, they'll be okay.
Yeah.
Because.
Oh, they could absolutely get out of water. Yeah. I'm sure almost certain of that.
But they're not gonna go for a dip.
Unlikely, yeah. Yeah. So that's Triceratops. I think there's a really good paper waiting to be written, just shedding the conspiracy theory stuff here for a second.
Yeah.
I think that, like, it's so strange that Don Henderson has done this and has sort of left the field open for ornithischians to be treated in this way.
When was his last paper published? Is this just a case
of... It could
of,
just be...
This is what he's working on
wait
now?
A little bit. I think it was, like, 2016, though. It's hard to tell, right? It's always hard to tell.
Does the modeling take, and what else does he have going on?
He likely just has other things going on.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But yeah, I think it is a really cool opportunity for science to be done.
Yeah.
And until then, I'm going to say probably sink, but could probably swim. Featured creatures?
Featured creatures, the creatures that are featured.
Mikhail, what's up?
I have brought Diabloceratops.
Diabloceratops etoni, or possibly, hey, Tony!
No, Jesus.
No?
They could be.
A fancy boy ornithischian and distant ancestor slash cousin of Triceratops from the late Cretaceous of North America. Discovered by Don DeBleu in 2002 and described by Jim Kirkland, this early ceratopsid measured about 5.5 meters long. There are some unofficial weight estimates of 1 to 2 tons, though that seems a little on the small side for a boy this big. Diablo is Spanish for devil, in reference to the two prominent horns at the top of the frill, plus plus Seros or Keros for horn and Ops for face, giving devil horned face. It may be a coincidence, but Diablo also sounds suspiciously like De Bleu, the surname of the man who discovered the holotype fossil.
You know, I did not notice that, but you're right. Oh, it's such a good way around it. I didn't name it after me.
Well, he didn't describe it either, so okay. It would have been fine.
But still.
Yeah.
Maybe someone was just being very clever.
I think it's very clever.
It's very clever.
The specific name, I think it's actually, no, it's almost certainly just very coincidental, because there's a good reason for calling this a devil horned face.
Yeah, yeah. Very good reason.
Anyway. The specific name honors Jeffrey Eaton, a paleontologist friend of lead author Jim Kirkland.
So this guy is pretty cool looking with his two long horns on top of the frill. The frill is like sort of one of the more like kind of narrow, tall ones. Yep. And then there's the horns on the top kind of like go out to the side a bit. So they go like up and then over. And yeah, it's pretty devil-y. Mm-hmm. Pretty nice and spooky.
I will say that Triceratops is really weird among ceratopsids for having such a round frill. Mm. It also doesn't have any holes in its frill, even as an adult, which is also weird. Almost all of these ceratopsids have big holes in the frill that would have been covered with like skin, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, because this more oval shape of the frill, like now that I say that, I can sort of picture multiple other ceratopsians that have that, but because Triceratops is just so in the public consciousness, you're like, oh, look at this weird oval one.
Right, exactly. It's not like the normal condition of Triceratops. Yeah. There's no way Triceratops is just really weird.
But that's the one we all know about.
Right.
There's a couple of other smaller horns sort of above its eyes, and then a little horn on the nose. So lots of fun horns on this guy. Yeah, I saw the words medium-sized ceratopsian.
He's smaller than the smallest range I've seen for Triceratops is 6.2 meters long.
Right, so like 5.5 meters is not that far off from that.
That's smaller.
It's definitely smaller, yeah. And it's bigger than some other things. Yep. So medium. I guess medium. Yeah. I did not find a ton of information about Diabloceratops.
I mostly passed this on because it was a neat ceratopsid.
No, it is cool. And it seems like, I mean, there was a bit of a stir, of course. You know, you can kind of see, like when you're looking it up, there'll be multiple articles from the same year, like when the paper was published describing it, and people get hyped about the name. And then nothing after that. Because there's nothing, like, you know, it has a cool name and it's got these cool horns. But other than that, there's nothing too crazy about it.
Yeah.
It was, at the time that it was discovered, it was the oldest known ceratopsian at the time. So like 81 to 76 million years old. And during the time that it was alive, the Western Interior Seaway was at its widest. Mm-hmm. Things were very watery.
Yep.
So there was water around, definitely. Probably some lakes, some floodplains for this guy to hang out in, splashing around.
Yep.
Yeah. And yeah.
Might have floated.
Maybe. Who's to say?
I still think this guy probably would have sank.
Whenever you've got like horns on top of the frill, there's just a lot of bone density on bone density there.
You so don't want all of your weight being focused at the front and just tipping forward all the time in the water.
Comically splashing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm making such a big splash because of the big oval shape.
Yeah, the huge frill.
Oh, such a big frill. I did fall into a bit of a hole.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to find popular culture.
Right.
Also not a lot of popular culture.
Right.
But I did start reading the dinosaur toy blog. There's a blog dedicated to dinosaur toys.
I think I was on this site today.
Oh my gosh.
Was it really salty about an Oviraptor?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe it's a
different one. Who knows?
It was just called Dinosaur Toy Blog.
Sure.
And did it look like the site had been built sometime in the early 2000s? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
So because of the probably, you know, the interesting horns and maybe partially the name, in 2013, both the Collecta and Safari toy companies released a Diabloceratops dinosaur toy at the same time. And then in 2019, another company that seems to be some sort of German name, Schleich? I don't know.
Oh.
S-C-H-L-E-I-C-H.
Okay.
Right, released a toy in 2019, so Diabloceratops is still, it seems, a popular dinosaur toy.
It's a good one, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I got backtracked a little while ago, and I was like, okay, these are sort of the cows of the Cretaceous, right?
Right.
And then I was like, do cows float?
While you look that up, I'll talk some more about dinosaur toy blog. It turns out that you can really go into detail about the merits of one dinosaur toy relative to another one.
Yes.
For many paragraphs and pictures at different angles. And I skimmed heavily, but it was intricate, this description of this toy, these toys. Yeah.
I'm assuming you haven't watched any of the almost popular YouTube series, Your Dinosaurs Are Wrong, which is a strange combination, but I really love it. Strange combination of paleontology and toy critique, because there are a lot of bad dinosaur toys out there.
These ones seemed to be pretty good.
Yes. I think those companies make good toys generally.
Like serious attempts to get it as right as they could, given the information that they have. I mean, sometimes you're going to run into a situation where you make a toy, you have this information, and then new information comes to light, and you have to say, well, that's pretty wrong. What are you going to do? Yeah, but there you go. If you ever want to know about dinosaur toys, that's where you should go.
Yeah. I was absolutely on this page today.
Hilarious.
Looking at it. And, I mean, we'll talk about it in the next featured creature.
Delightful.
Before we get to that, I will say, yes, cows can float, apparently, according to farmhouseguide.com/can-cows-swim.
I mean, they're full of methane gas.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. You've got like 12 stomachs. Go for it. Yeah. Why not? How do you feel about the name Diabloceratops?
Oh, it's a great name.
It's a good name.
It's really cool sounding.
It is.
I mean, everyone knows Diablo means devil.
Diablo.
Right? Yeah. It just sounds, sounds so cool. And then, I mean, that's the voice too, right? Hello, I am Diabloceratops. And, I mean, he's a nice guy.
Oh, yeah.
He just got a spooky voice.
Exactly.
He wants to eat a lot of plants.
Very friendly.
Yeah.
Moving right along, I've brought us Euoplocephalus.
Euoplocephalus tutus. Another fancy boy, Ornithischian, are you 12? From the late Cretaceous of North America, this time a relative of Ankylosaurus. Lawrence Morris Lamb discovered and named this creature in 1897, though his initial name didn't stick for too long. Another real big lad, this dino measured 5 to 6 meters long and about 2.5 meters wide, weighing in at around 2.5 tons. Eu comes from Greek and means well, combined with hoplos, for armed, as in hoplite, and kephale?
Kephale.
Kephale, meaning head. It's Greek. Anyways, giving well-armed head in reference to its impressive osteoderms. The specific name tutus, or tutus, as I would prefer to say, is Latin for safely protected. In case you missed the thing about the armor in the generic name. This is
really
sassy.
Hammering
at home. Yeah.
Oh, you have not seen me be sassy about the name yet. Michaela, this animal was first named Stereocephalus, meaning solid head.
Okay.
But it had to be renamed.
Uh-huh.
Can you think why?
Hmm.
I'll give you a hint. We did an episode about it. That won't help.
Nope.
We did an episode about it. Wow. Back in April.
A long time ago.
It was episode 33. This is episode 42. 41.
You know, I'll be honest with you, that's more recent than I expected you to say.
Yeah.
But
I thought it was actually going to be more recent. I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
And by that, I mean tell you the
Thank
answer.
Thank God.
Yeah. The name had already been given.
To a bug.
Yes.
Okay. There
Again.
We go.
Again. They gave his solid head and they gave that name to a bug? Again,
bug.
The indignity.
Oh, you are angry.
What? Who wouldn't be? All of these dinosaur names are being used by bugs.
There's too many bugs.
There are too many bugs.
We just need to get rid of some.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so it's an ankylosaur, right? So it's wide and squat. It's got a big old club on the tail, bunch of armor. That's all cool. The Wikipedia article for it notes that the name has been misspelled more than a dozen different ways in formal literature.
Whoa!
Although that claim is unsourced. It's very funny, though.
That... So it's definitely an unwieldy name.
Euoplocephalus.
And there's some things happening in it that you don't expect.
Mm-hmm.
Euop
yeah.
is gross.
Euop.
And then euoplo?
Mm.
Oh, bleh. I don't like any part of it.
Before this, I thought it was euoplocephalus.
Right, that would make more sense.
But it's not, because it comes from hoplite. Well, oplos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Its nostrils were weird.
Okay.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Sure.
I think we talked about this back when we were talking about Ankylosaurus. Ankylosaurus is weird in terms of ankylosaurs because its nostrils are sort of on the front of its face.
Okay.
Most of them have them going out to the side.
Mm.
This one has four nostrils.
I don't like that.
No, okay. So probably, I I haven't actually found anything specific about this, but as far as I can tell, likely would have had the nostrils pointing more forward, mm-hmm. at least a little bit, or at least further forward on the face, and it would have just had two of them, because there would have been some skin involved.
Okay.
And that would have been covering the bony nares, rather than the actual making the nostrils, because our nostrils aren't like where our nares are, right? Yeah, because our nose comes out in front of that. Similar thing probably would have happened here. It is weird that there are four of them, and this is just like sort of casually dropped a couple places in the paper and on the Wikipedia page as though having four nostrils is normal. And I'm like, but did they have four nostrils?
Yeah.
And the answer is, I don't actually know the answer. It just seems more likely that they didn't.
And they just have extra holes?
Yeah, it's like a bit of bone sort of grew in the middle, just vertically down.
Okay.
And bisects the nares. Yeah.
Weird.
I'm not a big fan. There have been a lot of specimens assigned to Euoplocephalus over the years, but a recent redescription reined that back a little bit, because, you know, 1897, had some time to collect some things.
Yeah.
It was one of the better ankylosaurs known. A bunch of stuff just got lumped into it. 2013 got that rolled back a little bit. We're in a better position. However, we are still left with a lot of material for Euoplocephalus, which results in a number of toys based on it, which are labeled Ankylosaurus, because that genus is better known. And that is why I found myself today on dinotoyblog.com on an article from 2011 that complains about the fact that, yes, this ankylosaur is actually a Euoplocephalus.
Well, and like from the perspective of, we want people to buy this.
Oh, go right? with the star name of Ankylosaurus. You're not for
gonna,
sure.
Right? If something's got a name like Diabloceratops, yeah, you're going to call it that because people are going to be like, ooh, that sounds
that's
really
cool,
cool.
It's got distinctive horns too.
Yeah. But no. If it's just something that you could theoretically pass off.
I think the osteoderms are different for Euoplocephalus compared to Ankylosaurus. I'm not really sure what's going on there. Yeah. Back when we talked about Borealopelta, which is going back a little ways at this point, we talked a bit about the bloat and float hypothesis for why we find ankylosaurs out to sea.
Right.
It seems like they're not great swimmers, and I'm not going to say that ankylosaurs are very good swimmers. I'm almost certain they would have sank. They just have too much bone armor, and it's everywhere along them.
Yeah.
Their tail clubs, it's bad news.
Right, if we're talking about things generally having the same density as water, and then adding a layer of armor on top of those things.
Yeah, it's going to be rough.
Seems like it's going to
drag you down.
Yeah, overall density.
Uh-huh. So they could probably still swim short distances, but probably not great.
Yeah.
They were most happy out on land. Anyway, this is the idea where the bloat and float idea. This is the idea where an ankh would die. It would get washed out to sea while the body gets all gross and inflated with gases, as happens. This lets the body float much better and not just sink, and eventually the gas escapes and the body sinks surprisingly far out in the water. Find it millions of years later, and it's like, how did it get here? Bloat and float. Bloat and float explains more than just finding ankhs out at sea, though. It's also been proposed as a reason why we find so many ankh skeletons preserved upside down, belly up. Which is, it's a weird thing. And a recent paper has taken a look at it and said, yep, we do actually find more than you'd expect upside down. Why is that?
And yeah, that seems really weird. Even if the dinosaur is in a fight or something and dies, why would it be flipped upside down?
Indeed, yes. There was a hypothesis put forward. Hypothesis might be strong. The roadkill armadillo theory, which said that, we often find armadillos on their backs because they, like, roll that way after death. Anyway.
Don't armadillos, like, roll up? Though, to begin with?
So this paper actually took a bunch of pictures of armadillos that had died, which I feel really bad about for the paper writers. Susanna Maidment, I think, was primary author on this. Feel bad for her.
Yeah.
Anyway, and it found that this is not the case.
Okay.
Armadillos are equally likely to be found face down, face up, or on the side.
There you go.
Basically, just as you'd expect.
As you'd expect.
Yeah. Anyway, we do find more flipped over ankhs. What the heck is with that? We get to hear from our good friend Franz Nopcha. Yeah, Baron Franz Nopcha from one of our June episodes. He had a couple ideas about why we might find these. The more reasonable one was that carnivores would flip over an ankh and eat the soft underbelly.
That's reasonable.
It's reasonable. It doesn't really line up with the fossils, most of which have minimal or no teeth marks on the undersides of the bones. So, like, reasonable idea if you aren't looking for teeth marks on the bones, and at that point, maybe they didn't have enough bones to really be talking about that. They mostly had the dermal armor. Whatever. Or, says Nopcha, maybe these ankhs are clumsy. It's referred to in the paper as the clumsy ankylosaur hypothesis. It is dismissed almost entirely out of hand, and for good reason. It's very silly.
Yeah, maybe the Anks have weak Anks.
Right. Ankles. No, so they're going down a hill, yeah. Right? And they, they lose their balance. They roll a couple times.
Comically.
They get stuck upside down, and like a turtle, they can't get up.
Oh, no.
Now, this ignores a few problems.
Sure.
One of which is that ankylosaurs are half as wide as they are long and are thus incredibly stable.
So low to the ground.
They're their center of gravity couldn't be lower.
No.
It's incredible. It also doesn't explain why we would find these things out to sea.
No.
It's silly.
Oh, while they're rolling down, they end up, sploosh!
Sploosh.
Into the water.
Right. That makes sense. Also, it ignores that very few turtles cannot right themselves. Most turtles can get back up from being on their backs.
And once you have a big long tail,
yeah.
I think it makes it a lot easier to right yourself.
Yeah. So, Nupcha didn't really knock it out of the park on that one, but you gotta love it.
Yeah. And I mean, the idea that, so if some sort of carnivorous dinosaur were to manage to, you know, get an ankylosaur, and theoretically, yes, they'd want to flip them over to get at the good stuff. But
I'm not sure how much good stuff there was.
That's it. And I just don't think that if I'm a big spooky theropod, I'm like, I want to try to eat that.
No!
There's so many other things that are much easier to eat than that.
It's going
to
hit me with its tail, which has a club on the end of it.
A club.
Euoplocephalus Wikipedia page notes that its tail club may have been used to fight Gorgosaurus. And I'm like, guys, calm down. Okay.
Whenever they start to... Actually, yeah, I think in Diablosaurus, they say it lived at the same time as Lycronax something.
Oh.
Another big chompy boy.
Yeah.
And so it's like, this dinosaur may have been the prey of that one. And it's just reaching. You have no evidence. It just is a fun idea, you know?
This featured creature was absolutely an excuse for me to just shoehorn some research that I had done that didn't end up actually fitting into the episode. Anyway.
Delightful.
Pop culture-wise, I looked. Jurassic World Evolution and Alive both have this guy.
Ooh.
He was on Dinosaur Train as Eugene.
Oh.
The Euoplocephalus apparently also appears in something called The Land Before Time animated movie book.
What?
And this is where I went down a rabbit
Good.
Hole.
Good.
Yeah. So what even the heck is that?
Yeah, right? That's my first question.
It is a CD-ROM that was put out that is a semi-interactable read-along adventure tale of The Land Before Time, the first movie. So what you see is pixel art Land Before Time scene with a couple small interactive elements or things that might move around.
Right.
And then there's like gems on the ground, and clicking on those brings up a puff of smoke, and in that plays a much smaller, scaled-down movie clip from the first movie.
Wow.
So it like reads some text across the top of the screen, and you can read along because it's highlighting the words as it goes, right?
Yeah.
And then you can play a bit from the movie, and then you can move on.
Wow.
It's all up on YouTube for some reason. It is so incredibly 1996. It came on a CD-ROM, and you gotta love it. Yeah.
I recently did discover I had this crazy flash of like this game I used to play in the 90s, and it was called Lenny Loose Jocks. And you would travel around Australia.
Oh.
And it was like a top-down, sort of like 2D. To this day, I don't know what the point of the right. game was. You could like go to different places and like play mini games. I don't know what you were supposed to be accomplishing, because I never did it. But I had a brief flash of memory that this game even existed. And yeah, you can go on YouTube and just watch the entire thing. Watch the whole thing.
What a strange industry.
Yeah.
What a strange future we find ourselves in. I like the name. I like Hoplos. I think it is awkward to say Euoplocephalus.
Yeah, it's awkward to say. And as you said, it is pretty redundant to also have...
two just in there, yeah. Yeah, it's very armored. We get it.
Yeah.
Of course, it was a rename, so whatever.
That's hard, yeah.
Yeah. The original was like armored solid head, right?
Oh, okay.
And that's fine.
That's cool, yeah. Yeah.
Now it's armored head. Not quite, but you know. The voice, there are two ways to take it, right? Because obviously it's a klutz. This is a guy who falls down no small amount.
Oopsies.
Right. But is it like an Urkel-style klutz?
No.
Or is it Diamond in the Rough just has to take her glasses off and then she's pretty klutz?
Oh, jeez. both are good options.
I think both are good options.
And I mean, Steve Urkel can become Stefan Urkel, right?
I'm not really up on my Urkel war.
I don't remember how this happens. I think there's... let's not get into this. He's well, smooth. He's a smooth version of Urkel.
I think we go with Urkel. And, oh, I'm euoplocephalus.
A slight incline. No.
I'm stranded on my back and I can't get up. Oh, no. This is so embarrassing. And that's euoplocephalus in a nutshell.
It is embarrassing. Not gonna deny that.
Next time we have a thrilling adventure involving fossil poaching.
Ooh.
And Nicolas Cage.
Yes. This is where I shine, listeners.
We'll be talking a little bit about fossil poaching, why it's bad. Mostly the spoiler alert is it's bad, don't do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I heard something about a Tarbosaurus and Nick Cage was involved, and I was like, you know what, I'm in. So we're gonna read about that. You're going to provide us the Nick Cage lore that we've been so deeply craving.
I do know a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I thought I didn't, I think. But I was wrong. I was very wrong.
We'll see just how wrong next time. Until then, listeners can always reach out. Email is dinosaurspodcast@gmail.com. Twitter is @thedinosaurs. Until next time.
Hasta la vista.